Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. Also, don't forget to check out our contest section on our website to submit your information for our free monthly giveaways. For more information, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com/contests. On today's show, Tom and I have a really intense show. Also joining us is Scotland's leading bee advocate, Graham White. We're going to talk about whether or not the pesticide industry is worried about the global avalanche of scientific evidence condemning their products. German activist group the Coalition Against Bear Danger's open letter to National Geographic, and a new analysis from Professor Charles Godfrey of Martin College, Oxford, claiming that there's no sign of damage to honeybees from neonicotinoids. So first, I'd like to welcome to the show my co-host, Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, June.
And joining us today, Mr. Graham White. Graham, hello and welcome back.
Hello from the land of rain and mist, which is what we're in at the moment.
The first topic concerns breaking news in regards to USDA scientist Jonathan Lundgren, who was suspended for confirming that neonicotinoids kill monarch butterflies. My question is for actually both of you. How are you perceiving this? Why are they getting so bent out of shape when there is so much evidence out there about the impact of neonicotinoids on pollinators? And also, there was already a paper that was published by Dr. Vera Krischik in regards to the impact of neonicotinoids on the monarch butterflies. So why now? Why are they in such an uproar about this research?
Isn't there something in the mafia called omerta? Vow of silence? Well, that's what's going on in the EPA. They won't discuss this. The Extension Service has been given instructions not to discuss neonicotinoids. Neonicotinoids are the new N-word. And so they're doing everything they can to bury the question.
I agree. I think that I think the United States Department of Agriculture is in effect an extension of the pesticides industry, and that it receives its instructions from the executive branch, which is, you know, as closely allied to the pesticides industry as it's possible for two organizations to be. And there's been a long, long history. There's been a number of scientists have been put on the rack for telling the truth about different pesticides within the USDA. The neonicotinoids issue is just the latest in a long run. Jeff Pettis and Dennis Van Engelsdorp, who made a major discovery about neonicotinoids in 2011, were made to actually publicly retract in almost in an act of confession on British television. They had to go on British television and say that although they'd made a major discovery about neonicotinoids killing bees' immune systems, it was of no relevance whatsoever. And that's what we're seeing with Mr. Lundgren, who's made a very innocent observation that clothianidin kills monarch butterfly larvae. And because he dared to go public with that, he was given permission to go public with that, but then his bosses panicked and hauled him over the coals, suspended him, and I believe it's cost him $4,500 for his two-week suspension. So freedom of speech, freedom of scientific thought, and freedom of scientific speech is obviously under vicious attack in the United States Department of Agriculture.
It will be very interesting to see where this case goes. Dr. Lundgren was at the Western Apiculture Society conference here 2 weeks ago and spoke. And he introduced himself and said that he was on vacation. He could not discuss his research. He'd been given instructions not to discuss his research, which he did anyway. But he's been silenced. This is not the first time, though. We can go all the way back to 2003 when clothianidin was being considered, and EPA scientists recommended that there be life cycle studies before registration, and in 2 months they were handed their heads and were forced to go along with a conditional registration. So this is nothing new. What we have, unfortunately, appears to be a very corrupted management.
I agree. I think that I think they've made a very, very big mistake, because if they had completely ignored what Jonathan Lundgren was telling the world about monarch butterflies, it would probably have been a minor news article and a few people would have made a few links and that would have been that. But now that he is, his case has been taken up by the peer group, which I think is public employees or something for whistleblowers,
Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility.
Right, yeah. It's going to become a major national case of major national scientific and judicial importance. I think he'll win hands down. I hope he sues them for $1 million and makes them promote him to an even more senior post. But I suspect that he'll be offered a large sum of money to go away and keep quiet. I don't know what they'll do, but they've made a very big mistake, because he's going to win this case, in my view.
Well, a win would include the removal of some of this corrupted management.
I don't think they'll go that far. I think they will. The USDA is like a super tanker with that's been plowing along a pesticide rut for the last 30 years or 40 years. It's not going to diverge by 1 millimeter from its course. And its course is towards pesticide land, and its only future vision of the world is a world dominated by GM crops and systemic pesticides. They're not going to change because of Jonathan Lundgren or any inconvenient things like facts.
I would like to just mention something that appears in this document that's published on peer.org in regards to this situation, and under the summary it says the suspension was imposed in connection with two events: a submission of manuscript by Dr. Lundgren on the non-target effects of clothianidin on monarch butterflies to the scientific peer-reviewed journal The Science of Nature; b, a paperwork error in Dr. Lundgren's travel authorization for his invited presentation about his research to a panel of the National Academy of Sciences, as well as to a USDA stakeholders group, the Pennsylvania No-Till Alliance. And it further goes on to say that these actions were not justified and the discipline was not proportionate to any perceived offense. In addition, the suspension constitutes retaliation for his protected disclosure, a formal scientific integrity complaint Dr. Lundgren submitted in September 2014 that detailed numerous ways USDA managers had abused their authority and improperly interfered with Dr. Lundgren's research and professional activities in violation of agency's regulations. So that ties back to what Tom's been saying for how many years?
You don't have to look very closely at the details to see that this is primarily a lot of nitpicking to try to silence Dr. Lundgren.
I read the peer submission, the lawyer's submission, and what happened was he made a discovery that clothianidin kills monarch butterfly larvae. He submitted that paper to his boss, who's a lady whose name I can't pronounce, can't remember her name, for clearance. And she looked at it and said, I want this reviewed in several minor ways, and send it back to him. And the system they had operating at the USDA and still do is that once your boss has seen it and asked you to modify this and that, it's then cleared for publication. And he as far as he knew, that he'd published dozens and dozens of papers before. He did exactly what he'd done. He submitted it in the past. He submitted it to his boss. She sent it back with minor corrections. He accepted the corrections and did them, and then he published it, and then all hell broke loose. And I think the boss panicked. I think that the boss just saw that she was going to come up against the CEO of Bayer or Syngenta and somebody even more, you know, much more senior in the USDA, saying, "What the hell do you think you're playing at? You're blowing our cover." So that's the basis of it, really.
I don't think the boss panicked. I think the word came down from above.
Right, that's possible too. But it doesn't matter. He should be given, the beekeepers of America should be getting together to give Jonathan Lundgren a gold medal for speaking out scientific truth and really trying to get to the bottom of what's responsible for the annihilation of the monarch butterfly over vast areas of the United States. And he has made a major scientific contribution to that insight. And instead of being punished for it, the entomologists and biologists of America should be giving him a gold medal. They really should.
He also did some studies on the effectiveness of seed treatment on commodity crops and found that there was no benefit. And that certainly didn't add to his popularity in the USDA.
That's correct. He, in effect, he replicated the same studies that Christian Krupke had done at Purdue, which proved that there was zero benefit when neonicotinoids were applied to soybeans and only a very, very small benefit when they were applied to corn, which is fantastic news, because if farmers wake up to that and realize they're spending all this money for no benefit, then one would think that hard-headed economics would take over and farmers would stop throwing their money down a money pit. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that simultaneously there was a post in The Guardian about a new analysis from Professor Charles Godfrey of Martin College, Oxford, claiming that there's no sign of damage to honeybees from neonicotinoids. From what I understand, Graham, and perhaps you can expand upon this, they are desperately trying to find a way to get rid of that ban in Europe. And what Lundgren just did would be counterproductive to those efforts.
Well, I think we have to suspend judgment on the Martin College Oxford meta-analysis for a few weeks until some more independent scientists have had a chance to look at it and criticize it in turn. But Godfrey, it seems to me, and Martin College in general, is definitely part of the scientific shock troops of the GM systemic pesticides industrial agriculture model, which the American government and the UK government are trying to force onto the world. I'm sure he will deny that, but even before he did this study, he did a previous survey of all the science that had been done, and it was quite obvious reading between the lines there that he was trying to belittle anything that said that neonicotinoids were responsible for bee deaths. And what we're seeing here is a conflict between reality and laboratory science. The reality is that since 1994, every single beekeeper in the world who's come up against neonicotinoids knows from direct personal experience that thousands, in fact millions, of their hives have been destroyed by neonicotinoids. And the rest, all of the science papers that have been done have really been propaganda in many respects, trying to disprove the obvious, evident reality. And Charles Godfrey's new survey of what's been going on allegedly in Europe is part of this, of the same whitewash, in my view. And I think that I sincerely hope that independent scientists will take it apart and show it up for what it is, which is greenwash or whitewash.
I find it astounding that someone of Mr. Godfrey's stature could make the claims that he's made. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming, connecting the neonicotinoids to not only the bee losses, but to massive environmental damages. And if what he is saying is accurate, that there is no connection between the neonicotinoids and the bee losses, I find that just incomprehensible.
Well, it's entirely comprehensible when you understand that Charles Godfrey previously worked for Syngenta, and that he currently heads up something called the Future of Food Program at Martin College, Oxford. And the Future of Food Program, if you go and look at the website, I would essentially say that their worldview is that we have to feed 9 billion people in the next 50 years, and the only possible way to do that is to force the adoption of GM crops, high-tech biotech industrial agriculture, systemic pesticides, neonicotinoids, the whole package on the rest of the world, primarily on Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, India, South America. That's everything on their website points to them doing that. And the idea that Charles Godfrey, as the head of that movement, could seriously be an unbiased judge of whether neonicotinoids are responsible for bee deaths, as we know they are, it's just ludicrous. And I think it will be treated as such by all independent scientists.
Well, I think the big question isn't how are we going to feed all these people? It's how is industry going to profit from feeding all of these people? And that has been the real question for people that keep talking about how the population is out of control. They're neglecting to remember that these corporations are in business for a reason, to make a profit. And there's no point in them teaching people how to grow their own food to be sustainable, to be truly sustainable and able to take care of themselves and provide for their families if they cannot profit from them, because that does nothing for the corporations. So the bottom line is, how can industry profit in order to feed people? Not how can people be fed by their technology. They could care less if the people are fed. What they care about, once again, is how they can profit from it.
Well, if I may come back on that point, I was in India in 2011, and I met with groups of peasant farmers in Bangalore, Kerala. And they, when I asked them, were they dependent on Western aid to feed themselves and so on, they fell about laughing, and they said, look, we have two messages we want you to take back to the West. The first one is, India has been completely self-sufficient in food for 4,000 years, which is about 10 times longer than the United States has existed as a nation, or Europe, or Central Europe, if it come to that matter. And the second message was that I asked them if they were organic farmers, and again, they fell about laughing, and they said, we can't afford to be anything but natural farmers. They don't call it organic farmers. They can't afford pesticides and tractors and so on. So India's 1 million farms feed 1 billion people, but there is no profit in that for the global multinational corporations. There is a huge amount of profit if they can destroy that entire system, take over those million farms, and impose industrial agriculture run by Western banks, with pesticides by the major corporations and tractors and oil and the rest of it. There's huge amounts of profit in that. That won't benefit the people of India. What benefits the people of India is that they are, at the moment, largely self-sufficient. In 1 million farms support 1 billion people, which is a massive achievement. And the same is true in Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, and so on. These people do not need Western corporations dumping their technology and their patented seeds and their pesticides onto communities and countries which are self-sufficient. Simple as that.
Thank you, Graham. Now, lastly, I'd like to talk about an open letter that the Coalition Against Bear Dangers, who's been advocating against neonicotinoids as well as some other major topics that Bayer is involved with. Basically, it pertains to a game that was created to educate kids falsely about how technology is beneficial to these people that we just talked about who need to be fed. It encourages the use of neonicotinoids as a very viable application. Now, Graham, I know you played the game. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, this game is an online computer game, a graphic game that puts a child in the role of a novice farmer and challenges them to select pesticides, GM seeds, irrigation, and so on, to make the best crop they can. But the whole thing is predicated on the idea that the child is forced to select genetically modified seeds, which are patented and owned by, you know, the major corporations, systemic pesticides to kill the insects, systemic herbicides to kill the weeds. And what it doesn't say is at the end, that grain or whatever they produce goes onto a global commodities market. It doesn't actually help the small countries that they live in. The good thing is, well, it's appalling that National Geographic would actually ally itself with a company like Bayer, which has the worst reputation in the world as a bee-killing pesticide manufacturing organization. It just shows an enormous lack of insight and vision on the part of National Geographic. The good news is this is the worst computer game I have ever seen. In fact, I haven't seen a game as bad as this since about 1979, when the first text-based computer games came out. So this game isn't going to influence anybody. No self-respecting American child is going to play it for 1 second. It's incomprehensible, literally. So they've wasted a lot of money and made themselves look silly, in my view.
Now, Graham, Rupert Murdoch paid $725 million for 73% control of a partnership with National Geographic's media arm. So the fact that he's involved, what does that say to you?
Well, I don't really know much about Murdoch, except that the Murdoch publishing empire is generally regarded as one of the most right-wing, rapacious organizations in the world. So the fact that National Geographic has become part of that does not leave one feeling very good about National Geographic.
This is just another example of a concerted effort on the part of these corporations to green themselves up to purchase all sorts. There was an issue regarding Burt's Bees recently, now owned by Clorox, and I've seen graphics which show the interrelationship between many of these suspect corporations and what used to be green organizations, green companies. They have a great deal of money to spread around, and they're using it to their advantage. And Rupert Murdoch bought National Geographic for a reason, and I think we're beginning to see the reasons.
Well, I know a lot of animal activists are well aware of this new partnership and have stopped supporting National Geographic on social media because they don't want to support in any way, shape, or form any of their efforts because of, you know, what they're involved with. And we're at a point where so many species are on the brink of extinction. They are strategic in their efforts, but to a certain degree, they're not really thinking them through. The game itself, as Graham pointed out, it's not something that kids are really going to use anyway.
No, I don't think they'll use the game, but, I mean, a lot of people have criticized National Geographic, I would say, in the last 20 years, that its main purpose seems to have been to sell tourism to very exotic and remote places in many respects. And as someone who's done a bit of traveling myself, I think tourism probably presents one of the greatest threats to, you know, places like the Amazon or the Arctic or the Antarctic. It's the actual act of tourism, of sending millions of people to these places, like the Himalayas being the classic one, where virtually every tree in the Nepal area, in the Kathmandu Valley, has been cut down to provide heat for tourists and to cook their food and so on and so on. So National Geographic is probably the greatest promoter of tourism in the world, and I'm sure that vast profits have been accrued through advertising, airline seats and hotels and so on and so on. So it's entirely logical that it just becomes part of the same corporate capitalist media complex that Rupert Murdoch runs. It entirely fits within that like a foot within a shoe.
What Dwight Eisenhower might have called the chemical industrial complex.
Well, yes.
Well, the bottom line is that it's an acquisition basically to keep promoting things that are destructive to the environment, period.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't follow National Geographic particularly, but it'll be interesting to see what people who do commentate about tourism and environmental protection have to say about the way it changes in the next year or so. If this alliance with Bayer is anything to go by, then that does not bode well for the future of National Geographic.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today, and once again, to be continued.
Well, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
No lack of interesting items to talk about.
Folks, if you've missed any of the segments, please look at the show's archives, which are available at theorganicview.com. Tune in next week as Tom and I continue the discussion. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, folks.